Listeners of this podcast know that enterprise technology companies have been migrating to subscription-based as-a-service business models. In this episode, we will sit down with Eduardo Coloma, the CEO of MapTech, a leading provider of software and hardware solutions to the mining industry. MapTech has been serving the mining industry for over 40 years and is now in the midst of a major as-a-service transformation. Eduardo will share his insights on why MapTech decided to embark on this journey, the challenges the company has faced along the way, and the strategies they have used to encourage customers to adopt their new as-a-service offers. He will also discuss the role of artificial intelligence in MapTech's as-a-service transformation. And I am Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. We're going to get this insight engine humming. Welcome, Eduardo. Let's start out here. So can you provide an overview for the audience about the solutions that MapTech provides to the mining industry so people have a grounding there?
Sure thing, Thomas. First, thank you for having me. I appreciate the invitation to be part of your podcast. So MapTech is an Australian private company. Our hardware and software technologies are suitable for all mining types and commodity. They help miners to translate the technical data from the various system and processes across the mining value chain into knowledge for making better and safer decisions. We've been grown from what was a small dedicated geological database service office back in 1981 to a global technology business with more than 25 users spanning 98 countries. And we are very proud that our solution, you know, are across all the mine value chain from exploration to rehabilitation.
Fantastic. Well, I'm so glad that you're here. And you and I met because I think your company became a member of TSIA to help prepare for an as-a-service transformation, right? The process of migrating from selling technology transactionally to selling it more as a subscription. And so I want to start with that journey there. As the CEO, why did you believe MapTech needed to embark on that particular transformation?
All right. So two things there. So you're exactly right. We joined to the Technology Service Industry Association. For us, was a strategic move, actually, to help us navigate this transition effectively. The first step for us was to learn how to define an effective customer engagement model. And being part of this association has been great. Now, back to your question, I believe that shifting from traditional upfront sale to a subscription-based model can be challenging, right? But it's becoming essential in today's market. This change allow us to not just play different, but obviously offer more flexibility to our customer at the end. So this obviously can avoid large initial costs and instead of paying a way that better match the value for the customer to get our product. Now, with subscription pricing, we can also reach new customers as well. So it's a mechanism to grow for customers that prefer to pay as they go or may not have the funds to actually commit with you. And another thing that actually moving towards subscription business model, some customers love the flexibility of trying the technology without actually a long-term commitment. Now, all these growing trends of customer at the end of the day is because they are moving, you know, the initial costs when buying high technology equipment or software. And this is because they are moving their spending from capital to operating expenses. Now, if you consider all these things, all these changes in preference and spending habits, adopting a subscription model is not a choice anymore. It's a strategic necessity for technology companies like ours.
You know, what I think is interesting because the mining industry, I think, is, I'll call it a conservative industry, right? It's going to move slow. It's not, you know, there are some industries that lean into new trends really quickly, and there's other industries that are cautious. And I think of mining, the industry being cautious that way. And so how are you encouraging customers, right, that may have never purchased in an as-a-service way, right? They're always like, I just buy my technology, I own it, I implement it. And so how are you encouraging them to think about the benefits of this model?
You're absolutely right. Mining is one of the interesting industries because it moved quite slow. Now, The interesting thing is that since the pandemic, it's been an acceleration of the adoption of technology. And it's very good to see, you know, that our customers are actually embracing this model more than what we thought, which is an interesting thing. And again, I believe that this is because they got more access to technology through this model, you know? Yeah. And particularly because if you think about mining itself is a very cycle
Yes.
Yeah. Industry, right? And subscription business model fit really well with that one because you can scale up and down in the way that you want.
Yep.
Now, yep. We choose for the same reason. And another important aspect for MapTech is that we fund our own success. So we really need to be careful in this transition. So we choose to go with a hybrid model at this point of time. Mm-hmm. A hybrid model, which, you know, require a good balance between the economic engine, between the perpetual license, you know, and the subscription offerings in order to navigate in a better way our P&L perspective,
yep.
You know. So that's the thing. So we basically help our customer in the transition. Existing customer still got the option to choose between perpetual license or subscription, and new customer is only subscription available. Now, the strategy that we're putting in place, we call the pull strategy. So rather than to push customer to subscription, what we're actually doing is to ensure that we repackaging under subscription, we got a flexible pricing option, we got features and functionality that are only available in subscription. So then yep. Customer want to get those things more than we push them to go there.
Yeah, you shared a lot there. And I just want to make a quick observation. You talk about this industry and there was more appetite for this new model than initially you might have expected. And, you know, that is a story that I hear again and again. I talked to some of our members who were in financial services. And they would say, look, you know, banks are never going to buy subscription. They want to own their technology. It's never going to happen for us. And then lo and behold, guess what? You know, next thing you know, they're knocking on the door of like a Diebold and they're saying, I want, you know, the ATMs as a managed service. I don't want to own this anymore. Right. So I think the lesson for the audience is don't underestimate the appetite for this model in your industry. Even if your customers aren't knocking at the door for it, once they see it and they see the benefits, like you're saying, you know, it can scale up. So I think that's an important observation there for people to understand. And then the other thing you talked about is, you know, as you make this transformation, you have this install base, which is in the old model. I think what I heard there is for any net new customer, you are basically saying, look, we really want you to be in the new subscription as a service.
Correct. Model. Correct.
That's it. For your install base, your legacy customers, you're giving them a choice. They can decide. But I also heard that you're saying your new R&D, your new features and capabilities, you're saying if you really want those, you need to be in the new model. Is that correct?
Yeah. And on that, you go two options, right? You transition your perpetual license towards subscription or you subscribe.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you can't have the two.
Yep. Perfect. So I think that's a great, you know, set of practices for people to understand how do I actually move my customers to the new model and make that transformation. Now, you know, so you're sitting in the CEO chair on this transformation, and we know we've studied this. This is not for the faint of heart. This business model transformation, it is not super easy. So what are some of the biggest challenges that you're working through for the company to help them make this business model transformation?
I guess I can put these things in three different buckets. You know, the first bucket is build what we call organizational capability, you know, and this, this involves developing a skill, knowledge, processes, and resources within the organization to basically enhance our overall performance and also our competitiveness. Now, things that we're doing here is organizational structure changes. And one of the major things for us was the customer success organization. In fact, you know, was one of the first things that we engaged with you guys. And particularly because we really want to enhance our customer engagement model and focusing on adoption. I think there is an important learning for us, you know, with the layer model that you guys put in place in black and white to the industry. And actually the adoption is one of the biggest aspects that we are pursuing at the moment. So that was from an organizational structure perspective, but also, you know, there are system behind, you know, we are improving telemetry because improving the visibility, particularly how our technology is being used by our customer, particularly to support that adoption too. Ramp up new functions like business analytics. You know, we didn't have that one, but essentially with the complexity, as you can imagine, after 40 years, trying to help to connect all these disparate data sources and provide this 360 view is actually very valuable. Building digital capability as well. Again, being an incumbent company, you know, with more than 40 years, all our solutions were pretty much desktop orientated. Now, thinking about e-commerce platform, what are you talking about? Well, we got it now. And that was something that we have to build. IT improvement, because as you move forward to a subscription business model, all your policies need to be refined. We need to be very on top of data quality, data privacy, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously continue with our quality and continuous improvement process, which is part of our ISO certifications. All those things, I put it in a bucket as a building organization capability that actually they are not minor, because, you know, if you really want to transform the business, you really need to go to the foundation. You need to have a very solid foundation. Otherwise, you're going to have problems, you know, during the scaling phase. The second bucket there, Thomas, is change our product-focused vision. And let me expand on that, because, you know, companies often focus too much on the product, which can make them overlook other important part of the business. By thinking of the company as a whole system where the product is just one part, we can start to see everything more clear. And the broader perspective helps us to understand the part of our business and how they can work together. And more importantly, how we can simplify the interaction to our customers. So that's a second big challenge. And the last one, which I think is not minor, and everyone actually faces that one, is resistant to change. If we are doing great, why are we going to change, you know? But at the end of the day, when you are changing current business model, always mean that we are going to do some adjustment, a big adjustment, to be honest with you. Now, this is challenging itself, because you are questioning the very practice that got you where you are already, you know? And it's not that this method had stopped working. It's just the industry has changed and it's demanding new approaches and new playbooks. So people in the organization might resist this change for various reasons, and this resistance can potentially derail, you know, the implementation of a new business model. So to counter this, what we are committed is to maintain transparency, showing empathy, and communicating clearly. In fact, we are aiming to over-communicate this one to ensure that everyone understands why these changes are necessary and how these are going to benefit the organization in the long run.
So I'm going to play that back, because you shared a lot there. And again, I think for so many companies, it's so important what you're sharing here in these three buckets, right? So the first bucket, you itemize several organizational capabilities that when you are pivoting from traditional transactional model to as a service, there is a lot of net new capability you have to build. As you said, we have to stand up customer success. We have to figure out product telemetry. You know, the customer engagement model is going to change. So what I see consistently is a lot of times management teams, and to be honest with you, specifically the CEO, will underestimate that, right? They sit there and they go, I just want this to happen. This is just make this happen and it's going to be super fast. So, you know, specifically as a CEO, you really have to internalize that there is a lot of net new capability that has to be built that the company does not have. The second thing you said is, now that we're in this as a service posture, we have to think differently organizationally. It's not just about the product, but it is the relationship between the product and other functions. So it's like culturally in our mindset has to shift. That's a big change. And then the third one is the fact that change in itself is not natural. And especially, like you said, you guys have been successful. You've been around for over 40 years. And what you said, I see all the time, is that you will have employees, and you know, and I get it, they're saying, why do we need to change if we've been successful, right? We've been around for 40 years. We've got these customers. They seem to love us. And now you're telling me, Eduardo, that, you know, we have to change our customer engagement model and our products and the way we work together. And do I really need to do that? And so, like you said, there are tactics there about being transparent, helping employees understand why this is, you know, sort of non-negotiable. We have to do this. We're not doing this because we have nothing better to do. This is really important to the future of the company. So I think all those lessons are really, again, for people that are earlier in this journey, you really should listen to this, because I see those same lessons again and again. And you have a special nuance, because you are a family-owned business. I'm sure that has some advantages and disadvantages, but I'm curious on the advantage side, how is that helping you navigate this transformation?
Yeah, correct. So we are a family-owned business. And as a private company, we got flexibility, which is good. You know, when you are actually in a public company, you know, you need to start with the reporting and communicate every important change that you're doing in the business. You know, now it doesn't mean that we're not doing it, but we're doing it internally in this case. Now, being private company give us the advantage of having a long-term perspective as well, because this is a long journey, and this, you know, is something that is going to hit you. You know, it's going to hit you result. There is no way around it. Yep. You know,
so the having financial fish.
Yeah, absolutely. So having that long-term perspective is very good. It's very useful, and which give us a lot of more time and flexibility to roll our ideas and evolve our business model. Now, the transformation to everything as a service, basically, model is not just using new technology. And you just said it before, you know, it's about completely rethink our business model, culture, and processes to continue to enhance the value to our customer, but also to reinforce our competitive advantage. Now, it is important to stress for people that is listening here that transforming our business model is a journey that takes several painful years. Let's be honest with that. And particularly from a financial perspective. So the sooner that has, how the people say, you know, the sooner that you swallow the fish, the better. For us, we've been pushing subscription since 2020, basically. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, we also have subscription as an offering, but we never thought from the perspective of bill a monthly or annual recurring revenue. So the mindset wasn't there. It's, we use that one as a mechanism to rent the software, basically, and basically monthly sporadic rental. You
know? Pricing model,
That's right. So for us, it's crucial, actually, being a private at the moment and family-owned business, because it's crucial for us to have the ongoing support from the owners during this transformation process. That's critical for us. And having the backing is essential for navigating these changes successfully and ensuring that we can implement the new strategies in an efficient way. So yeah, I'm pretty blessed to be in this position.
You know, what's interesting, we do have other members that are family-owned businesses. And it's amazing. Like, for example, we have several companies from Germany, and you can have some very large companies that are still family-owned. It's pretty amazing. You don't see that very much in the States, but you do see it in other parts of the world. And what is interesting when I watch them operate, you know, I think there are a lot of advantages that you stated there of being able to go through a significant business model transformation. You're not in the public eye. You typically can have a much longer term view about success, and that's all good. But it is the beginning of the journey that I see is the hardest, because you have to convince, just like the mining industry is conservative, family owners can be conservative as well. You have to convince that family that this is really, again, non-negotiable. It's critical to future success. Shed a light on how you got those family members through that knot hole. I mean, how or were they already there? Were they already convinced themselves?
That's right. I was lucky, to be honest with you, but because I think a big part of that, you know, it was, we were thinking on the same direction, basically. So having that support from them is critical. And it's not that you need to convince. It's actually, you know, in another way around. I mean, we are seeing the same thing, how we're going to make this happen. And for me, it was an extra caveat there because, you know, when I was offered the opportunity to serve as a CEO, this was basically back on end of 2019. Okay. And so I went in my process of this, you know, 90 days, what we're going to do kind of thing, and put me at the end of January, beginning of February 2020. So now when I start to launch all these new things, all this new thinking, the new mindset that we need to adopt, the changes that we need to do the business. And it was February 2020. So then, you know, and I remember very clearly because this was in our headquarters here in Adelaide, you know, in front of all our employees. And then I start to travel to the different offices. And one of the first offices that I went there was the North America business. And we got offices in Canada and US. So I was in US in mid-March 2020, talking about all these things, you know. And one of the days that I was in Denver, I watching the news, you know, and I start to see, oh, Microsoft employees are going home, you know. I start to work from home. What's going on?
Oh, yeah.
And they were totally changed, right? Because then we are facing a pandemic in front of us, nothing that we are familiar with. And obviously all these ideas, you really need to change your switch, you know, and you can to a new position with a lot of energy and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, you need to face reality as well. So it, for me, it was an interesting thing, but I believe that the pandemic itself helped us to understand that we obviously need to evolve because things are changing faster than the way that they were, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think the pandemic was an accelerator for a lot of different folks around their business models and realizing how they have to operate. And as I listened to you on that, it sounds like when you took the job, you didn't know that you had to take the company through an as-a-service transformation yet, but you learned that pretty quickly. Is that what it sounds like?
Correct.
When you first got in the chair, okay, you didn't realize. And, you know, I will give you kudos because, again, I have watched so many companies try to navigate this transformation. And often the CEO is the biggest issue. And why? Because, like, you know, as you're in it now, this, again, is not for the faint of heart. This is hard to do a business model transformation. There are some CEOs that look at that and say, you know, maybe that's for the next CEO.
Why bother? Yeah.
Right? I can just ride it out and maybe we can make another 3 years in the current business model and then I'll let the next person worry about that, right? But you were new in the chair. It sounds like you quickly realized it was sort of non-negotiable, and especially with the pandemic, it just really forced it. We were going to have to operate differently.
Unfortunately, that mindset doesn't work for me and for a lot of people in the company. You know, one of the biggest things that we mapped has is that they got a lot of long-term employees. I myself been in the company for 24 years already. Mm-hmm. You know, and as me, you know, there is a lot of people around this. So we got this long-term view. No, it's not this, okay, I'm going to get the job for 3-4 years, so why bother?
Right. You know?
It was never there because essentially what we're trying to build all together is how we can continue to be relevant for our customer for the next 40 years. You know, that's the mindset.
Yeah, which I think is the right mindset. And again, something like as a service transformation is all about you do it not just because you have nothing better to do. You do it because you want to stay relevant.
That's correct.
You want to stay relevant for your customers. So related to that is now this topic of AI and how it is unfolding in industry after industry. So I want to shift gears there. And just like as a service has been a disruption for companies that had to move that. I mean, I think that AI is proving just as disruptive, right? And I know that you have customer-facing capabilities there. So why don't we start with those? So how are you using AI in the marketplace with your customers?
Sure. Let me start by saying that I totally agree with you. I think AI is a very transformative general purpose technology with the potential to reshape the entire economy and alter the society. So we really need to be on top of these things. Now, let me share with you a little story about how we have been leveraging AI for a few years already. But I'm going to put a little bit technical here, so I apologize for that. But, you know, I am an engineer. That's my background anyway. So if you think about it from the 1990, really, most of our geological or body modeling technique were using two-dimensional sections, okay? Then when we evolved to use more the computer, we evolved from this two-dimensional section to a 2.5 computer software method that was revolutionary because now you can actually create sort of a three-dimensional view of the whole body. Now, today, with the complex of the whole body, with the big data paradigm, makes even revolutionary this methodology, but it's very slow and cumbersome. Now, then the industry evolved probably around the 2000, 2005, and they evolved with rapid techniques such as explicit and implicit model technique that they offer faster, you know, less cumbersome alternatives to conventional techniques, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, however, these techniques suffer, particularly from the efficiency and the scalability issues when you apply large complex ore body and big data set. So to solve that problem, we've been using deep learning techniques to predict basically categorical variables such as geological domains in a very highly efficient manner, you know, which require very little input from the user instead of the parameter and can generate results in a matter of minutes or hours. Things that essentially take months to build. And that's where we are actually using AI very early on. In 2021, actually, we launched our first commercial of the shell product, which is called Domain NCF, which apply machine learning techniques and cloud processing for rapidly generate resource model directly from the drill hole. So that's one example in how we're actually using AI techniques for our products, actually. We got another one, but I'm probably not going to go into much detail, which is our scheduling solution, but essentially is using evolutionary algorithms that is inspired by mechanism of the biology, the evolution, basically reproduction, mutation, recombination, and selection. So it's a very interesting thing, but I'm not going to go into much detail. Let me just finish with one more thing because I think it's quite important. We're also experimenting with large language models. Some of our development team utilizing the 10% of the time, we got an internal initiative where we allow people 10% of the time to think and find new ways. So one of the teams, you know, it took that one and investigate how they can actually use LLMs to help users to write a script for reporting purposes. So rather than to learn a new language like Python, for example, they were utilizing these LLMs to actually, through the prompts, provide a script and run the reporting. So we've been experimenting with AI, and we're going to continue to do so anyway.
So let me ask this, because I'm intellectually curious and just for layman terms, and I'll give you an example. I was listening to an interview with a gentleman who worked at a pharmaceutical company. He's like a chemist, right? And he said that you could spend your entire career trying to find the right combination of chemicals, whatever, to have a drug that is actually effective. He said you could spend your entire career and never create an effective drug. But now, because they're using AI, AI is doing the work of doing hundreds and hundreds of combinations and then saying, look, here's the top 10 you should try, right? So they're like, AI is narrowing it down for that chemist. And he was saying, like, you know, my chance of being successful now has just become exponential. So I'm curious, in the world of mining, I have to assume you're trying to figure out where to mine. And so it sounds like AI, again, with the computational power, being able to do things faster, being able to look at a lot more variables, that you are exponentially improving that decision-making process of saying, this is where you go. Is that correct? Is that correct?
So one of the aspects is how much you got, you know, and what's the quality associated. But another aspect of the business, what you're going to do about it, you know, how you're going to mine it. It's going to be an open pit, an underground, you know, and there are tools there that allow us to evaluate, but evaluate in a different way. A product that I was mentioned that I didn't went into detail, which is MapTech Evolution, because it's a population-based algorithm. Rather than to run one thing at a time, you're running 100 of different scenarios at the same time. And the beauty about that evolutionary algorithm is that they are learning between them. So it's not that you are actually running 100 or 1,000 things in parallel. It's actually you're running and learning during the process to come out with high quality solution. So it's a new way to think. It's a new way to explore things, but it requires a new mindset as well, because now you probably are not going to get the same result over and over, because it's a natural uncertainty that you got to run it anyway. So you can run things and you can see different solutions, but they are very similar between them, but has some difference. And that variability, I think, is very important for us to understand more and more, particularly when we came from you know, a mindset that I got this answer, this is the right answer, and this is the answer. You know what I mean? So that's challenging that mindset. And I think it's early days for everyone, but I think we're going to realize very quick that that's the way to go.
Yeah. And what you're articulating there is the fact that the opportunity for innovation, right? So instead of coming up with, quote, one answer, there could be multiple potential scenarios on the table that you then get to choose from. But the end game is the fact, and again, this is because you said this earlier, you said, look, AI is going to transform our economy. And I, you know, the more and more I talk to people for different use cases, the more and more I am convinced of that. So here's yet another industry, mining, that is going to end up, bottom line, being way more efficient and effective because of being able to use AI, again, to figure out where to go, how to take it out the most cost effectively, all that. And you're going to make those decisions in a compressed, you know, instead of it taking hours and hours and hours, it's, you know, so it's just another example of we're going to be able to do mining way more cost effectively, probably way more better on the environment and all those kind of things, because of the technology. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. So that's the external use case. Tell me a little bit about how you think AI is going to be employed for your internal workflows, just the way you know, you're operating internally.
So one of the things that we are actually working, and it was a big project for us actually, and we are continuing to work in anyway, is how we can move from a reactive mindset to a proactive mindset. And that involved, you know, how we put all the data that we got in front of us in a way that we can get insight that we can transform in action. So one of the things in here is that we are doing is to how we can improve the visibility on how our customers are using our solution. And all that data, how we can leverage that data to things like predictive analytics, right? At the moment, we are in the phase that is basically a descriptive analytics. You know, this is customers using this function, you know, so many times. But what we really want to evolve is utilize AI more and more to help us to build predictive models, you know, predictive models that is going to allow us to scale part of the different functions of the business. You know, customer success is one of those. Because we are not a large company, we don't have a huge customer success organization, for example. So one of the things that we really want to utilize this more and more is how we can have a really good customer churn predictor model that is going to allow us to focus on those accounts that are going to be highly likely that's going to churn. So rather than to have multiple people, you know, associated with different accounts, we're actually going to be very flexible and take advantage of the technology to do that. Now, the challenge for us is, as you can imagine, we've got a huge spread of different solutions that are going from desktop to web browser, from on-premise to cloud. So it's massive. So we really start with the desktop solution here, basically, and standardize the telemetry to understand better the, how the customer are using our technology or our product. So this is providing us the 360 view that we want to have. Now, it's early days, but I'm very confident that we're going to make progress. So that's one area where we're going to be utilizing that more and more. Now, the second thing there are processes in the company that are going to be replaced. And that's an important thing that we need to understand. And again, I believe there's nothing wrong here. In fact, it's going to be an accelerator for companies like us because you don't have a lot of people. So you really need to utilize the people in the best way as possible. And all these repetitive tasks that you can do, you know, things are very simple, but today is a norm. Yeah. Rather than that, pick a plane and traveling, I had this conversation we are having through, you know, this application. And more likely than not, you know, at the end of the meeting, you're going to have the summary of the meeting. You didn't write anything. And you are going to fill that information in CRMs or whatever. So all these processes that we used to do really well, most of them are going to be challenging. And we need to identify them and find the best tool to support to our business in the next phase.
Well, you know, the first use case you put on there around predictive, it could be predictive analytics for customer success. It could be predictive analytics for support. I was just in a conversation with Val Galowski, who leads our research in support services, earlier today. And we were talking about the fact the biggest challenge that you have for companies of your profile is that you have all of this legacy equipment that's been out there. You know, again, you've been around for 40 years, and typically it has, you know, traditionally been disconnected. You don't have the telemetry, right, to drive these predictive. So that is one of the most, you know, common challenges we hear is people are just like, gosh, you guys are talking about all this next generation AI stuff and what all this cool stuff you can do it, but I'm not even connected, right? I don't even have any. So you've had to live through this. I mean, this has been your starting point. So how did you overcome that? You know, how long ago did you start chipping on this?
Well, we introduced telemetry quite early on in the process, really. But I have to admit that it wasn't widely utilized across the business. It was something like, okay, we got visibility. Great. There is, you know, do something about it. And also the granularity probably wasn't enough to translate insight into action that we can see.
Do something with it.
That's right. We quickly realized that improving this function was crucial to truly understand how customers were using our solution. So we dedicate probably around anything between 9 to 12 months to this project. It's an important project. Initially, I thought 3 months should be okay, but clearly, you know, wasn't the case. But important to realize because the complexity is quite high and standardize all the different data sources is a key component. But at the same time, the thing that this unpacks is the quality of the data. Sometimes you got things that you are recording information, but the quality of that data is not there. So then you can really leverage for the next step. So you need to step back a little bit, understand the data, clean it up, you know, and making sure that that is a solid foundation to move forward. Now, it's important to know that during this time that I'm talking about, it's not just the telemetry. Part of this project was the selection of our customer success platform. Even though we want to remove complexity across the business, it's inevitable that you need to put another component, you know, and customer success platform was another that. So trying to understand how to fit that platform with the data was a key part of that project too. And as a product of that one, what we did at the end, you know, we created this data warehouse that allow us to have a really quality data that now we are in the next phase to actually leverage that one with the predictive analytics component that we were talking before.
No. Yeah. And you said an important thing there around the fact that when you started chipping on the telemetry, you said, well, you know, maybe in 3 months we can get things where we want them to be, and it takes longer. But the other important thing here is that, again, as the CEO, you were committed to the fact that that was very important to get quality telemetry. Like you said, maybe we had some telemetry. It's not what we needed to understand adoption, to do, you know, the things we need to do. And so obviously you stay focused on that, you put a resource on that. And that is, again, I'll be candid, that's a missing component we often see with companies. You know, they get these products out there and they're like, well, we don't really need that telemetry, and it becomes a low priority and no one's really screaming for it except maybe the service folks saying, we really need this. But if no one's listening to that, product has other things to prioritize, right? You put your money elsewhere. So it's, you know, incredibly helpful if the CEO is saying, no, this is a priority. We have got to stay on to this because this capability unlocks a lot of goodness for us down the road. But right. You're playing futures there. It doesn't fix a problem tomorrow, but it does set you up to do really good things down the road. So again, I commend you for that focus, but I think for people listening, I mean, they always ask, well, gosh, how do you get started? You know how you get started? You start.
You have to start.
Resource on it. You got to put some dollars on it. And that's how you get started. And so sometimes it's not, you know, overly complicated. So, you know, I'm watching the clock. I'm in one final question here. So sure. If you were speaking to the CEO from another company, they are, like we said, you know, sometimes people are like, well, maybe that's the next person's problem, right? And they're debating, you know, how aggressively should I really lean into as a service transformation? Maybe we need to do that. Should I lean into AI? Do we really need to do that? And they're debating that. What guidance would you give them?
Right. I think technology companies, and in fact, every company really, need to evaluate the risk the AI poses to their business, really. And particularly how AI will transform certain aspects of the technology landscape. It may be a while, actually. Some services will benefit from AI by enhancing their functionality. Others may become obsolete mm-hmm. because if the AI can replace their core offering. And I guess, you know, the guidance here is I would like to emphasize the importance of assessing both business and technology risk. You know, I think that's very important. Having to do that, then companies can adapt and find new competitive advantage. I think this is crucial for mitigating risk and ensuring sustainability, in particularly in AI-driven future. Now, how urgent is that? Well, I guess, you know, you got three simple options here. Your product or service, that's something necessary. And AI make it better within the same process, it would probably survive, right? And it might even add more value and you can probably charge more for it. So that's good. But if AI means that the task your product or service or software does is not needed anymore,
yeah.
Whether that's a vertical market or horizontal function, you know, then your business could really be at risk and you need to do something about it. And finally, the third option is if AI can handle what your company does, but outside your existing product, like solving complex problem easily, that's when you are facing a big technology risk. And basically, you know, you really need to assess that when where you are. And depend on that, how aggressively you need to go, you know. And I think that's probably the guidance here. But one thing that I want to mention about watching the presentation of Amy Webb, not sure if you know her, but it's from the Future Today, is a few weeks ago, actually. And she was suggesting, you know, that we are at the brink of technology super cycle, she called the super cycle. And it's primarily driven by three pivotal technology trends. You know, one is artificial intelligence that we're talking about. Yeah. The second one is the biotechnology. And the third one is the interconnection of the different device, people, pets, objects, mm-hmm. whatever. Now, the interesting thing in this super cycle is these three technology trends are converging at the same time, which is not being seen before. Normally it was one thing at the time, and then your business can adapt quickly and navigate. Yeah. The difference today is that these three different technological trend and converging at the same time, which basically is going to reshape our interaction with practically everything around us. And that's a very profound thing that we really need to think. Now, for me, this transformative period really in the technology landscape is an extraordinary opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's a moment filled with potential, and truly the only way forward is to embrace these changes. There is no other way around it. And this is what makes being part of the today technology industry so thrilling. You know, opportunity like this one don't come too often. So let's embrace it. I guess that's probably the final reflection.
Well, I've not heard this concept of a super cycle, but I will tell you that resonates with me because I've been in tech for a while. When I started, I was programming on a mainframe, right? So I went from mainframe to client server, and that was a big deal. And then we went from client server to internet, and I thought that was the biggest deal I'd ever see in my career. And those were all significant technology changes, but this feels way different. I feel this concept of a super cycle resonates with me, that it's just not that we have, oh, it's just AI is just kind of like the internet. No, it's not. And like you're saying, there's other trends and capabilities that are converging here all at the same time, which are completely changing the way we operate. And I've said this on this podcast multiple times. I just get concerned that there are leadership teams that are underestimating, in the way you framed it, there's technology risk and business risk, business model risk. And I think there are leadership teams that are underestimating the rate of change we're about to go through here in the next 3-5 years, to the point that if they're not making moves on the chessboard, they are literally going to have an irrelevant business model. I mean, it is just, correct. Like you said, they're going to just be like, hey, you know, how you used to make money is not relevant anymore. And so I think a lot of institutions, organizations have got to come to grips with this. At the same time, like you just said, I think it's incredibly exciting. It's really invigorating to be part of the technology industry right now, because you can just see these things changing in front of you so quickly. And again, the end game for most industries like mining is you end up in a better place. You end up more efficient, more effective, again, just better for the planet, all that kind of good stuff. I mean, what's not to like about that? I mean, that is really exciting.
Yeah, no, 100%.
So, well, thank you so much for coming in today on Tectonic. I really enjoyed the conversation. Again, a lot of companies out there have a profile like yours, and I think they should be inspired by the fact that you can absolutely make progress on this as a service transformation. You can make progress on AI. You can get your stuff connected and get telemetry. It is doable. You just have to lean into it, for sure. And I always end here with the question of the day. So my question of the day for the audience is, what's your excuse for not making progress on your own as a service transformation? Cheers, everybody.